Let's face it, AI has gotten a pretty bad rap in the media and pop culture. Just think of Terminator, Blade Runner, or Ex Machina. But I think it's time that we give AI a fair shake. Welcome to Practical AI, the capacity for good, where we speak with some of the brightest minds in the industry about the exciting intersection of AI automation, customer support, and customer experience, and how we can use the latest and greatest technology to help teams do their best work.
Hello, my name is James Deal. Welcome to the podcast, Practical AI, the capacity for good. What does it mean to know your customer? What are the steps involved in really knowing your customer? And when you do, how do you know what tools to use to improve the customer journey? Where does AI fit into the journey? And how do you leverage AI and automation to delight your customers and create memories? Well, joining me today is Jim Tincher, an internationally recognized and customer experience expert, journey mapper with a deep passion for customer experience. Jim is the founder and CEO of Heart of the Customer, a CX consultancy, where he helps companies of all sizes boost revenue and reduce costs by increasing customer engagement. He's also the author of two books, Do B2B Better and How Hard Is It to Be Your Customer? Several platforms such as Engedi, SupportBee, FeedSpot, Influencer Marketing, and CustomerThink have named him as the most important customer influencer to follow. Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
So I love to start our conversations by just understanding a little bit about who you are, what makes you tick, a little bit about your background, and what gets you up every morning.
Sure. You know, I started in small business where you're always customer focused. You got to be. And I went from Best Buy, again, customer focused. And I'm a bit naive. At that part of my career, I just thought that every company was customer obsessed. It's just the way it is. Maybe there's a department of customer obsession, federal government. I don't know. But every company, that's just the way they operate. And then I went to a large health insurance organization. And I learned that's not the way it always works. Literally nobody in marketing or product development had ever met a client. And they're okay with that. But, you know, I wasn't okay with that. And we led the nation in sales. We also led the nation in percentage of customers who left the program in churn. You know, we're number one in churn, not really where we want to be. And so I made it my mission to say, look, we need to understand more about our customers. We were building the products we wanted to buy. And we knew too much. It was health savings accounts. We knew way too much about health savings accounts. We were building these really complex products that most people didn't care about. And so how do we instead build it around what they do care about instead of all these different features that only a tiny percentage of customers would use?
Okay, interesting. So CX Effect also named you as one of its top 50 CX influencers to follow in 2023. Why is that? What do you attribute that to? What are you talking about or what are you saying that's getting people's attention right now?
Well, it might be longevity. I know I've been riding on this for 12 or 15 years. That might be it. Well, really, I think the reason is this came out a lot in my last book, Do B2B Better, that you have many folks in customer experience that are focused entirely on the customer. That sounds good, but they can't connect that to what everybody else in the business is working on. You know, I just came back from the CXPA Leaders Advance, which is a fantastic seminar. But I was there, I was talking to leaders, and I said, what are you hoping to learn? And they said, I want to learn better how to influence my executives. I said, great. So what customer behavior are you trying to change? Well, I want to make it easier for customers. That's not actually what I asked you. What customer behavior are you trying to change? And when I do a keynote, I'll get into group chanting and I'll have three groups. I'll say, okay, we want to create an environment where customers want to, first group say, spend more, stay longer, interact in ways less expensive to serve. That one's harder to chant. But those are the three outcomes. We should be creating an environment where customers want to do that, that they want to buy more from us, spend more money with us. They don't want to leave. They want to stay with us. And no customer really wants to tie up your support line. No customer wants to have your folks come on site to fix problems. They want to interact in ways less expensive to serve. It's up to you to enable that. And I talk a lot about customer experience needs to tie what they do back to what the executives that they're trying to influence care about.
Talk more about that. What do you mean? Can you give an example of what that would look like?
Well, IBM does a study every year where they ask CEOs, which executives will you rely upon most in the next year? And the top answer, 2021 is the last time I've seen them actually publish the results. And it was 44% chose the CFO, 43% chose the COO. Now, in preparation for the book, we interviewed hundreds of customer experience leaders, surveyed hundreds more. And I would ask them, if I were to ask you whether your customer experience is getting better or worse, how would you answer that question? Overwhelming answer, surveys. If I were to ask you how your CEO would answer the same question, how would he or she answer it? Pause and, well, those same surveys. Really? Okay, I don't see a lot of CEOs spend time surveying, but let's go with that. Third question. How would your favorite finance person answer that same question? And it was always a pause. And one person busted me. He said, well, Jim, you're assuming I know somebody from finance. Oh, you got me there. Yes, yes, yes. You did get me there. I did assume you knew somebody from finance. And many don't. And we look at the really effective customer experience leaders. They don't have to wonder how finance measures the customer experience because finance doesn't do that naturally. But they had had the conversation. They'd worked with finance to connect customer experience to financial outcomes. And that's a big part of my message. Pointillist, a journey analytics platform that was purchased by Genesys 2 years ago, when they looked at the number one challenge for customer experience programs, it was proving ROI for the work. It was a top number 2019, 20, and 21. They didn't, to my knowledge, publish it in 2022. But it's a big challenge to organization, mostly because we're afraid to try. And you know, yesterday I put on a webinar where I mentioned seven different financial metrics to tie to. I won't go through them all now. My favorite is net revenue retention, combination of churn and the spending of your customers. Can you get your customers to buy more from you? And can you prevent them from churning? Again, two of those outcomes you talked about earlier. That to me is my favorite metric. It doesn't work in every industry, like health insurance. There's not a lot of upsells in health insurance. Somebody says, I love my health insurance so much, I'm going to get a second plan. Nobody does that. So it doesn't fit, for example, for that industry, but for many, it does. We use that in manufacturing, use it in financial services. And so that's a lot of what I'm talking about is if you want to improve the customer experience, your first step is actually to create a better business outcome, which then gives you the funding to be able to come back and further improve the customer experience.
That's a fascinating viewpoint. You know, I haven't heard that viewpoint very often, but it absolutely makes sense, especially if you're talking to CEOs. That's what they are measuring on. They're measuring, yes, they'll look at surveys, but they're looking at our current customers spending more with us and are we hanging on to them? If that's the case, then what are we doing that ties to those? What activities are we doing that ties to that? And that's where I think then you focus, right? And if you're not seeing that revenue increase, if you're seeing a lot of churn, then you obviously have a lot of work to do. And if you're seeing good retention and you're seeing increase in expansion revenue, knowing what you're doing so you can keep repeating it is critical, right?
Well, exactly. Thought experiments I'll do with people is say, okay, I choose somebody from the audience and I'll say, okay, you're the CEO. And so I have them sit there, their arms crossed as the look of the CEO. The person left is saying, okay, Michelle here has a great idea. Michelle has a program that if we support her initiative, we fund it, it'll increase the NPS by 20 points. It's like, oh, that's fantastic. That's terrific. Yeah, your CEO is customer focused. She loves that. Terrific. But on her right, Joe has a program that'll save $1 million in costs. Who's going to get the money? Joe's going to get the money every time because there's a hard ROI. But if instead Michelle's idea we can show will improve $3 million in retention revenue and $2 million in cross sales, well, now it's a harder decision. And now Michelle has a shot. Every CEO loves net promoter score improvements. They all love that. It's fantastic. They will not keep their job because NPS went up. They will keep their job if they become more profitable. And it doesn't matter how customer focused they are, they're going to have a hard time funding your program if you can't connect it to what they're about. And the same with your COO, pick your favorite executive. Your COO doesn't get promoted, doesn't get more budget because the NPS went up, but they do through cost savings. They do through enabling more revenue. And that's what executives get excited about.
Great insight there. So if we're talking then about CX professionals and how to connect these dots between ROI and activities within customer journey, what do you think is the most important skill for a CX professional to have?
Really, it starts with going out and talking to others, being very active out there in leadership. Tabitha Dunn, she's chair of the board for the CXPA, and she spoke at this conference this week where she talks to all of her stakeholders every quarter and creates an updated map. Brian from AAA. I was talking to him. I said, well, I heard a rumor. You spend 60% of your time out talking to fellow executives and 40% doing the work. So that's a lie. I spend about 80% of my time talking to other executives, 20% doing the work, because that's what's so critical. So it's really that change management. It's that connection to other executives. That's the number one skill to do this, because when you do that, you can learn what motivates them. And then you can bring that back to the program and say, okay, we need to tie to these things. Dave Seaton's a friend of mine. He's another customer experience thought leader. And he wrote a post a while back saying that CX is the loneliest profession. Interesting. I've written about that before too. And I was on a, we have a program called the Customer Experience Fellowship. Half dozen very advanced CX leaders. We get together with them regularly. And I happened to be there right after it came out. And I asked them, are you guys lonely? And they all said, no. Well, what explains that difference? What explains the difference is they're out regularly talking to the rest of the business. They're not lonely. They're overwhelmed with people time. They're always there. But if you're spending your time looking at surveys, you spend your time down in the data, even talking to customers, yes, you're lonely because you're a small team trying to influence a big organization. Get outside of your own silo and start talking to others. And that's so important.
Because that's how you'll influence the rest of the organization, is through those conversations. Yeah, it makes sense. So in your book, How Hard Is It to Be Your Customer? You stated, I want to try to transition into the customer journey side of things here, as we kind of start to then transition into, well, how does AI impact that customer journey? But let's talk about customer journey. So you said that 2 out of 3 journey maps fail to drive customer focus change. Why is that? What are the key indicators there around failure?
Well, so that's a research-based outcome. We surveyed hundreds of folks, and there were 3 factors that fit into it. The most important one was around change management. It's having a broad cross-functional team. We have a lot of prospective clients who say, we want to keep our journey mapping team small so we can be nimble and get done quickly.
Explain what is journey mapping real quick. So like, how would you describe journey mapping for maybe somebody that's new to that term?
You bet. So it's the process of going out, talking to customers about a specific journey. We'll define that in a second here. Could be the end-to-end experience, could be a sub-journey, but involving your teams to go out there, talk to the customers, understand what is most important to them, discovering the moments of truth, which are the few moments within a journey with a disproportionate impact on the outcome, and then visualizing that so everybody across the organization can understand where are those moments of truth, where are the points of friction in our journey that are causing the business outcomes we have? And so the number one factor is that broad cross-functional team. And again, what we hear from some clients is we want to keep that team small so we can get done fast. Well, our first question, the most important question is, are you trying to create a map of the journey, or are you trying to change the journey to improve the outcomes? If your goal is to create a map, hey, have a small team get done quickly. You bet. Good luck with that. Don't call me, but good luck with getting it done.
Knock it out. You got it. Okay.
If your goal is to change the experience, the journey map is a step along the way to accomplishing that. But if you go to, let's say, your digital team and you say, hey, you see this really red point in the back of the journey? That's your team. You guys suck. Can you do better? Clearly, when you use that language, but you're not going to get engagement because they weren't part of it. I'm a big fan of the ADKAR change management model, which is, and the second step of that is creating desire to change. There will be no desire to change if you're doing the work without them. You need to make sure they're part of the process. They own the process. They own the results. Then they will be your active partner in changing.
Again, getting out and talking to people within the organization, right?
Yes, exactly. Change management is so important. It's the fourth part of Do B2B Better. The fourth action of a change maker is change management. And it's so missing in our discipline. By the way, the other 2 factors were talking to customers, which I can't believe we have to talk about whether or not to talk to customers in a customer journey map. But we run across all kinds of organizations that created a customer journey map by getting employees in a room. There seems to be this belief that if you take employees and you add post-it notes, then suddenly everything gets better. You know, 3M creates post-it notes. They're a good Minnesota company. I love that. But there is no magical property that suddenly you understand the customer better because you use post-it notes. It takes the actual voice of the customer. And the third most important thing is deliberately selecting the right journey to map. Our research, we did a survey 3 years ago with hundreds of customer experience folks I mentioned earlier, and we found the change makers, Now, changemaker is somebody who can prove their work is creating those outcomes where customers buy more, stay longer, interact ways less expensive to serve. They were far more likely to have done an end-to-end experience first, where you look across the overall customer journey and then do sub-journeys after that, because they'd use that to identify where the biggest points that are causing customer problems that are impacting the business. And then they come back and they actually do twice as many, 50% more. So 50% more journey maps than do the non-change makers, the hopefuls. But they start first by looking at a broad view of the journey. Those three factors will cause the two-thirds to fail. They don't involve enough people across the organization. They don't involve customers. And they aren't deliberate about choosing the right journey in which to focus.
Okay, good. So then when we think about the customer journey and the customer experience, and if we're doing those things right, where somebody's going out and they're doing those three things correctly that you just identified there, what's the next step when you think about implement? What do you do then with this customer map? Do you have to manage this in a way? How do you use this customer journey mapping?
No, in a ton of different ways. First of all, of course, is to go out. Now we know that, for example, a common moment of truth in buying and using software, let's say SaaS software, is implementation. And so we go, how do we improve implementation? And property and casualty insurance, it's often a claim is a key moment. Once you know what it is, first of all, you work to improve initiatives. That's number one. Second thing we learned across is this concept of a living journey map. So when we do a journey map, we bring in the operational and behavioral data as part of that. And we'll show, for example, 37% of the time, we fail to hit our delivery dates. Okay, well, that's really important. The problem with that is it goes on the map and stays there. So you get better or worse, you know, that PDF doesn't magically update.
Sure, right.
And so the next thing we do is create dashboards or create living journey maps where it's actually tied to the operational, behavioral, and sentiment and financial data. So the map changes, whether real time or batch, but changes as the data improves or gets worse. So you're able to track that. Something else we found, one of the things that blew me away is when I looked at these change makers, is they were far more aware of the organization's data, the behavioral, the operational data, the financial data. They were very conversant with that because that's what the rest of the business talks about. CX talks in surveys. The rest of the business talks about data and finances. And there's that disconnect. But the change makers are really good at having a conversation about on-time delivery percentages, availability to promise in manufacturing, length of a life insurance sales process. They're able to talk about these types of data just regularly. Just the surveys are just another piece of data in their conversation. But the hopefuls, well, actually, if I were to summarize a hopeful versus a change maker in one sentence, it's that hopefuls report on sentiment. Changemakers study and change behaviors. And that's a key thing. And that's where, when we talk about AI, that's where I start seeing it there. So the first use of AI is commonly in analyzing open-ended text, understanding what customers are saying. It's a key part of understanding customers. It fits into sentiment, but it's really important. And great AI enables you to expand how you learn about the customer.
Okay. Interesting. So I want to talk more about that because I see two pieces of AI here within the customer experience. One is you talk about that inflection point in the journey where you get a disproportionate improvement or negative effect based on how you go with one particular point in the journey. I can see AI plugging into that and potentially solving some of those issues, right? Within like a claims process, for instance, or something like that. But I also want to talk about, because this is kind of your area, how is AI, how can it be used in the journey mapping and management and ongoing process of the customer journey as well? So kind of internally there within that process. But then I also want to kind of look at some of the examples of how it's used for the customer to kind of impact those inflection points.
Sure. If we go back 3.5 years ago, when journey analytics was really starting to get a buzz in journey orchestration, I looked at it and said, oh, my business is in trouble. Because at that point, we were a journey mapping firm. And I said, okay, I can see in the future, they're not going to hire us to interview the customers. Maybe they'll interview a few, but they're going to look at the actual behaviors customers have and look across. And we're starting to see that happen. Journey analytics and orchestration, in this case, journey analytics, are being used to say, okay, what do we know about those customers with a great outcome versus a bad outcome from the company's perspective? If a customer leaves you, that means you did something bad for the customer, likely. I mean, not always, but means something went wrong in the journey often, and that's a bad company outcome as well as a bad customer outcome. So you can use analytics to understand what is common amongst those. You know, you probably should still go interview them to learn what the results are, but you can say, okay, what we found was that we had property and casualty insurance example. We had a claim where it went on for more than 4 weeks and we had more than 6 touches in the claim. That's hard to get in a qualitative study because you'll talk to 30 people. You can get some of that, but you can't get down to that 6 is the magic number. But if you use analytics and you bring in that data, it can say, yeah, we look at that 6 is the magic number. Hypothetically, I'm not saying 6 is a number. In fact, it's probably much lower than that. But you, analytics can help, and AI is part of that, can help understand what is it that's really creating the outcome that nobody wants. The customers don't want to leave you. You're a property and casualty insurance company. It's easier for them just to keep staying with you. They don't want to go out and do the search. You don't want them to leave most of the time. And so it helps to find that mutually beneficial outcome.
That makes sense. So then let's talk a little bit about, okay, so the customer, what are some common ways to look at using AI in those, at those inflection points in the journey to improve them? And where do you see companies using AI in that way?
Well, the first way is to bring in unstructured content. You text analytics, voice analytics, and let AI go through it, categorize AI machine learning to go through it and say, okay, well, we find in the claim, for example, here is what we're hearing. This is when people call in the contact center, what they're saying. Here's what the emails are saying. So we can really bring out the sentiment and the cause from that. And so, yes, you may still want to talk to a bunch of customers. In fact, you should, but the conversation is coming from what you learn in AI. So in that hypothetical example, that 6 touches was an example, we'll go back. So why is that a problem for you? What does it look like to get a better sense? It's also, by the way, really good for change management if you record that video. So you use the AI results to say 6 touches is the big differentiator. And then you bring a video of somebody talking about how their 8-touch journey was so annoying. We all want to believe people are rational. They're not. You need to have the data there for that rational mind, but you need to get them desiring to change through the interview. But the AI is key there to help you understand what is the real issue and tear into that. And so you use unstructured content as part of that. Use the structured part as well. So the structured, use the operational data, behavioral data to say, here the issue is. Use then the unstructured content and use AI to say why that matters. And then do the interviews to illustrate it.
What types of AI are you seeing businesses, companies, brands starting to use that are customer facing?
Well, that's what's the exciting future. And it's early days. Now, the thing is, I was saying it was early days 3 years ago. It has really taken off.
Sure. I mean, end of 2022 was a little impactful point in the journey there.
Yes. I am big on journey orchestration. I believe that's going to be the future. It's struggled a little bit to find a buyer, but for those not familiar with journey orchestration, it's almost always partnered with journey analytics. So journey analytics will say, for example, the next best step, whether it's in a claims journey, an onboarding journey, whatever that is, a health insurance journey, this is your next best step to make sure you retain the customer and they create the outcomes they want. That analytics will tell you what that is. Orchestration is where you make that happen. So let's say, for example, you're a bank. And you look at your new customers, what you say is, well, those first 30 days of the customer journey are so important to retention 6 months and a year later. Pretty common. Well, okay, so use the analytics to tear that apart. And maybe what you find is that if we can get our customers to be using multiple touch points with us, they're stickier, or we're stickier for them. So we want them to use the branch, we want them to use online banking, and we want them to use the app. Because we know if we're able to get them to do that, they like us better and they're likely to stay. Again, better outcomes for customers, better outcomes for us. All right, great. How do we make that happen? Do we all call all of our customers and say, please use the app? Not so sustainable. And so what you can do instead is start to design a journey and use the orchestration to do this. So you can say, for example, let's start with those customers who opened at a branch. We have one down. We know they're using the branch. Now we want to get them to use the online banking and the app. Online banking, probably the easier one to go next. Fantastic. Let's look at all of our customers who haven't set up online banking after a week. It might only be 5 or 10%, but who wants to lose 5 or 10% of your customers? Not me. So what we can do then is we can start to test different orchestrations. So we can say, for example, okay, James hey, we noticed that you haven't used online banking yet. Let's send an email saying, hey, have you seen the benefits of online banking? It's fantastic. Second email, 3 days later, saying, hey, we have noticed you haven't used it yet. We really recommend it. And then third is we could send you a text, example.
I love that because it's like, I'm thinking as you're saying that, I'm thinking, so take that even a little bit deeper. Why not use, go first with text, hey, with a bot that's got the, you know, NLP and says, reached out and said, hey, have we seen you haven't registered for online banking yet? Can I help you do that? Sure, I don't know where to go. Here's the link. If you need help with, like, I mean, you could immediately engage them over, in this case, text is the most common form of communication, at least in North America. So yeah, that's exactly, that makes a total sense.
Well, that's the thing is you can do an A-B test. So you do the A is the email prep, B is the text first, start with text. What you may find is, again, hypothetically, is that in option B, you drive much more engagement with the website, but you also drive opt-out up by 15% higher. Well, now we have a business decision, which is the better outcome for us? And you could go either way with that, but that's a cool thing about the orchestration. You can test different ideas to see which ones actually work and then start to tweak it and learn as you go. And what I call it is a journey of one. And the idea is that when you start learning that James only responds to text, well, then I don't need him to opt out of email. I should learn from that and just stop sending him emails because he doesn't care. Or if I find that James, and again, you monitor this over time, and you say, James works well with transactional items from text, but if it's more involved, he wants to get the email so he can read it more. Okay, fantastic. If you can learn that. And so AI can help you identify and start breaking those individual scenarios. And we don't have to have, here are the three ways to interact with us. Which one do you want? We can let the orchestration start to learn from James and give him his unique journey, the way he wants to receive it. Not the way he says he wants to receive it, because nobody's going to say, please send me more emails. They won't, but they may accept them. But let the system learn from James and all the Jameses in your customer base. So each one gets the right communication for them. That's the future as I see it.
Absolutely. So, and you may or may not have an answer to this, but we're talking hypotheticals here. Do you have an example of a company that you've seen recently go down this path with that type of technology, that type of AI into their customer journey orchestration?
Yeah, and do B2B better. I include Schneider Electronics as an example. And one of their challenges was they have a platform.
And let me just say, actually, before you to go there, that I just wanted to call out that Qualtrics just said that the Do B2B Better book is one of the 10 essential reads for CX leaders in 2023. So congratulations on that book. And that's super exciting. So it sounds like you've been pulling some fresh material out of it here. And yeah, so go ahead with your answer. But I just wanted to call that out. Congratulations. And I hope people get a chance to pick that up.
Well, thanks. Thanks. I was really happy to see that. It was fantastic. So in fact, they're using Qualtrics as product. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but Schneider Electric is. And what they found was that when their customers use their online community, they buy more because they're learning more and they're buying more. And when they built this orchestration, what they did is they looked for their customers who had started to drop off in engagement. And they would just send a little nudge saying, hey, do you remember what you can do with the platform? Or here's some of these features. And what they found is because it wasn't a blast, it was tied to the individual and it was just a nudge reminding them of what they get from the platform. What they found is that little nudge made a huge difference. And they had multiple nudges at different, so they tested it out to find what the right
personalized. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Around when they've been engaging, what they care about. And they built this highly personalized outcome. And when they built it, I remember the story was that the team was saying, now, when does this email blast happen? There is no email blast. This is highly personalized, contextualized messages to our customers at the right time with the right information. And they found incredible value from being able to connect to that. And their customers get better value because they're reminded of a resource that could help them. Schneider gets more value because those customers who get more value buy more from them. And so everybody benefits.
Okay, great example. So, you know, I think we're nearing the end of our time here. This has been a great conversation. Really, really appreciate you chatting. So it can be very overwhelming, I guess, when we think about AI. There's so much out there in the media right now. There's so, you know, and you can be like, how do I where do I, what do I, you know, as a business? It seems like the approach that you're suggesting here is it starts with understanding what you're trying to accomplish. Because, I mean, there are, and that's part of this journey mapping that we've been talking about, because there's key areas that if you understand the impact of those key areas in the journey, AI can make a big impact on solving that for you. But that's really critical. Is that a good summary of what we've been talking about?
It's excellent. Start with the end in mind. A lot of talk right now about ChatGPT. It's fantastic. It's terrific. It's only one area of AI. And there's so much more capabilities out there. If you get distracted with, hey, it can help me write my emails better, my term paper, you know, that's interesting and all. But there are other areas of AI that can have a dramatic impact on your business that don't involve writing your email better.
Good point. So you're going to slide over here to, if you could take somebody to lunch right now in the CX space, who would you be interested in kind of sitting down with and having a conversation with to better both you, but also just understand more about who they are and what they're doing in their space, because you're really impressed with them?
Is the change makers ones driving change? The 4 days I learned the most about customer experience were 2 days at UKG. That's a software company. They do HR, payroll, similar software. Roxy Strominger leads them. And then 2 days at Dow, spending time with their customer experience and really learning more about how they do things. Jen and Ricardo, Ricardo's their leader now. Jen created the program. And Roxy, they were so open with sharing with me what they did. And that's what I love to do, is to take those who are truly change makers. And so that's why I'm not giving you a specific name, because it updates all the time. I met a number of the folks this week at the CXBA conference that I've been doing virtual lunches with, but it's those who are acting differently, the outliers on a positive sense. So it's not a thought leader. It's not somebody who created that. It's the people every day who are doing great work. That's what excites me.
Absolutely. Cool. So one last question, and this is around, so when we talk about customer experience, in my opinion, the piece of the experience that's lasting is the memory that that experience creates. And memories are critical. Things come and go, right? But memories we have, and a good memory about an interaction with the business, a bad memory. I was talking to somebody the other day who said, the worst thing that could happen is they have no memory of you whatsoever. To me, I think that resonated, because I think with a bad memory, you can still maybe fix that. Like, you still have an opportunity, but if they don't remember you because you are so unimpactful as a brand or as a business or as an individual, that's sad. That's disappointing. So memories are critical. So I just like to ask a somewhat personal question, but if you could create a life experience right now for you or your family that would create memories, what would that be? Kind of without regard for cost. Do you love to travel? Is there certain things that you do? What would it be? What kind of life experience would you create?
Wow, that's a big question. You didn't warn me about that one. So let me work my way there. So my kids are grown. One's married, one's in a pretty serious relationship. But we're all gaming geeks. So I would say probably going to the Germany board game championships, because Germany is where they make the great board games, and being able to have time with the winning games and the game designers, my family, I think that would be cool.
Awesome. Love it. That's a great experience. It would create lasting memories, obviously, right?
Definitely.
That are meaningful. So, well, anything else you'd like to add just in wrapping up that you wanted to share?
Well, at the risk of going down a rabbit hole, which I'll stop myself, but the memories part is one of the most important things to think about in the customer experience. Because all customer experience is creating memories. And if you can make certain to bake into your work that memory you're creating, Daniel Kahneman wrote about the peak end rule, that we remember the peak point of emotions and the ending. Always design your experiences to end with a strong ending. And so that's really look at. I probably should have done a better job of that in this podcast, ending with a pithy statement, but I would always say, keep that end in mind and always design for people will remember. So you're creating an outcome where customers want to buy more from you, stay longer, and continue to interact in ways that are less expensive to serve. That creates great outcomes for both you and your customers.
Well, Jim, this has been great. Thank you so much for the conversation. Enjoyed it and glad you were able to make time for us today.
Thanks, James. I really enjoyed it. AI is a fantastic new frontier that's starting to happen, and I can't wait to see what comes next.
Well, thanks.
Practical AI, the capacity for good, is brought to you by Capacity, an automated help desk, knowledge base, and customer experience platform. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found, and click follow so you don't miss out on any future episodes. And if you would like to improve your customer experience and internal operations, head over to capacity.com and get started for free. On behalf of the whole team, thanks for listening.